Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the NoVam Radio Network. Thank you very much for tuning in. This is our Thursday this week, and tomorrow will be our Friday, because on Friday I'll be on my way to the great gig in Seattle, sponsored by KPTK. And I would imagine on Friday night we'll just have a rerun of the Malloy program. Tonight's program, more about the situation between Russia and Georgia, and a new addition now. Bush is sending troops to confront the Russians. Yeah, you knew that was going to happen, right? Also, we may have a moment with Bob this evening. So all sorts of fun and frivolity on the program tonight, okay? It happened again today. The provocation put out by Limbaugh and Michael Savage and Sean Hannity, especially Limbaugh. Limbaugh loves to pick on people with cancer or people with Parkinson's or people who can't defend themselves. He stays in his hole most of the time. One can only hope that someday Limbaugh will choke to death in his sleep as a result of all the fat that encircles his vital organs and his throat. I mean, that's my hope. It really is. I would just like to see the guy choke to death on his own phlegm. What a pig. It is, without an argument, there is no doubt to me, none whatsoever. Up until about 3 years ago, I used to listen to Limbaugh on a fairly regular basis. And I also know, or used to know, I've stopped having any association with people who listen to Mr. Lardass, but the absolute control over the minds of people that Limbaugh is able to, weak people, that Limbaugh is able to exert, much like Father Coughlin back in the 30s, with his anti-Semitic screaming about the Jews and how good Americans should align themselves with the Germans and with the British and with the Canadians and stop the Jewish menace and the whatever the menace was back then. So the power of radio personalities to work wonders on weak minds is well known. Limbaugh is a master at it. He really is. I have to give him credit for that, much the same way I would give any traitor to not just to justice and peace in the American way, but also to anything resembling ethical conduct or moral behavior. It's astonishing to me how sick and degenerate this man is. And that's why I say I look for the day when his corpse is discovered by his cleaning lady or whoever is getting him drugs at this point in his life, and an autopsy reveals he choked to death on his own bile, his own fat, in his sleep. The latest example of how he infects people is what happened in Little Rock today. A man walked into the Arkansas Democratic Party headquarters and shot the party chairman 3 times, killing him. The suspect fled after being shot. He fled, and then he died after being shot during a 30-mile chase. The state party chairman, Bill Guatney, who was 49, died a couple hours later at University Hospital in Little Rock after this midday shooting. Witnesses said the gunman entered the party offices shortly before noon, said he wanted to see Guatney about volunteering. And Democratic Party officials said the man forced his way then into Guatney's office and opened fire. Guatney was a former state senator. He had served 10 years as a state senator and a Hillary Rodham Clinton superdelegate to the DNC convention. Or I should say a Democratic National Convention this month. You remember that last November, a man wearing what appeared to be a bomb walked into a Clinton campaign office in New Hampshire and demanded to speak to Hillary Clinton about mental health care. That resulted in a hostage situation that dragged on for several hours, and then he finally surrendered. And the guy who shot people to death in the Unitarian Universalist Church because he didn't like liberals. It is it's incredible. The abortion providers who have been gunned down in the street because of the psychosis of people who want to control women and who listen to Limbaugh's program. Again, let me say it for the third time. My deepest, most heartfelt wish regarding Rush Limbaugh is that he choked to death on his own bile, his own fat, some night when he is asleep. I think that would be fitting, because then the sorry son of a bitch would never even realize that he was dead. He would just cease to exist. But the damage he has done to this republic in terms of totally corrupting and polluting public discourse, the mockery he makes of people that he knows are incapable or just not desirous of fighting back against his attacks, whether they are minorities or gay folk or people with Parkinson's or people with cancer, the mockery he's been laying on the Edwards family in the past few days is just outrageous. His comment the other day that maybe John Edwards had an interest in his girlfriend because she did things with her mouth other than talk. You know, Elizabeth Edwards was just a talker and smarter than John. I mean, the guy is just vile. He's filth. It's just filth, absolute filth, who makes $30 million a year. It's astonishing what corporate America is willing to pay for this protection racket. It's just unbelievable. But there it is, every day in, day out, millions of radio stations across the fruited plain. And as somebody wrote to me, well, Rush makes 9 figures a year, you son of a bitch, and you only make 5 figures a year. How's that? That's fine by me, because Rush is eventually going to choke to death on his own lard. And one of his drug-dealing housekeepers, or charwoman perhaps, will show up and discover his already stinking corpse. And I think on that day, I know I, for one, will break every rule I have and bring with me to the studio here a huge bottle of Jack Black, and we'll sit here and celebrate for all 3 hours until I can't celebrate anymore, at which point Kathy will take over the microphone.
The housekeeper will be so shocked, she'll probably drop her shoebox full of little blues.
Well, whatever. It's I can't think of another human being that that's not in politics that turns my stomach as much as the big man does. So eat on, Rush. Eat those drugs. Pleasant dreams. And maybe someday you'll make me happy. The officer in charge of a Navy flight squadron that provides Bush and Gates, Secretary of Defense, the airborne ability to command and control the nation's nuclear submarines, nuclear bombers, and nuclear missile silos, has been relieved of duty. The officer in charge of a Navy flight squadron that provides the President and the Defense Secretary the airborne ability to command and control the nation's nuclear submarines, nuclear bombers, and nuclear missile silos have been relieved of duty. He is Commander Sean Bentley. He was relieved of duty 2 days ago by the Navy for loss of confidence in his ability to command. Bentley, Commander Bentley, who is based with the squadron at Tinker Air Force Base in Oklahoma, was removed after an investigation by the Navy's Inspector General was completed. The Navy did not release any details about the investigation or about any possible allegations against Bentley. But word is out, a source has told Fox News, so you have to take this with as many carloads of salt as you can get into your mouth, but the reason for his firing is out. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
21 past the hour. Commander Sean Bentley, officer in charge of a Navy flight squadron that provides the President and the Secretary of Defense the airborne ability to command and control the nation's nuclear subs, nuclear bombers, and nuclear missile silos, has been relieved of duty, according to Fox News. So, again, the person that sent this to me had a caveat with it. Notice where the story is from. So, you know, you decide whether or not to believe it. The Navy says about a half a dozen other commanding officers are released for similar reasons every year. A temporary replacement for Bentley already has been assigned. Now, the reason he was released, and let me just reiterate, he commanded one of three squadrons that provides airborne communications for the President and Defense Secretary to command and control the nation's nuclear subs, nuclear bombers, and nuclear missile silos. That's according to the wing's official website. That is Commander. That is the Navy Strategic Communications Wing 1. Now, according to the Navy, he was released because of an inappropriate personal relationship with a woman. An inappropriate personal relationship with a woman. Now, the Navy says this with a straight face. This is the same service branch that initiated and completed the tailhook engagement. Do you remember that? The wholesale assault and rape of female naval officers by male naval officers. This is the same branch of the United States military that will be called upon to launch all sorts of nuclear fire against Iran or anyone else that we happen to go after. And Commander Sean Bentley has been relieved of his position because of an inappropriate relationship with a woman. The Navy says it was for loss of confidence in his ability to command. Now, the sources are telling Fox News that it was an inappropriate personal relationship with a woman. So, like I say, you have to understand that this is a Fox News-sourced story. So, the odds are pretty much 8-1 that it's nonsense, that it's garbage. But the story is out there. The fact that he has lost control of his Navy flight squadron that provides this critical information is, to me, after I put my tinfoil hat on, clear indication of one more attempt to remove somebody from the chain of command who might have a problem with a nuclear attack against Iran. You think that's off the table? Do you think that has just, you know, like, disappeared? The primary duty of what is called the VQ-3 squadron, the primary duty, and that squadron is nicknamed the Iron Man. The primary duty is to provide communication with ballistic missile submarines, but is also one of three squadrons that provide the airborne communications for top government officials who command and control nuke subs, bombers, and missile silos. Now, Bentley has been temporarily assigned to a staff job with the Strategic Communications Wing, according to an Air Force spokesman or a Navy spokesman. And his removal, which was first reported by the Navy Times, is the latest in a series of high-profile firings by the Navy. The Navy said nothing about the reason the Navy lost confidence in his ability to command. That comes from Fox. That he had an affair, or not even an affair, an inappropriate personal relationship with a woman. If it was a matter of rape, fine, court-martial him. But you see, he would not be reassigned. He would be in the brig if it were rape. So, there you have it. Good news, which we will follow up here after the break. President Bush said today he is sending Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice to the Republic of Georgia to help broker a peace deal between Georgia and Russia. He did. He's sending Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice to Georgia. Now, she's the cover story. The inside story is what is going to go more or less with her. And we'll have that for you when we come back. If you read my blog yesterday, and I didn't write a blog today, we had to take Molly in to have her ears checked. I think she has swimmer's ear. Yeah. Don't send me any cures for swimmer's ear. It's under control. All right. So I didn't write a blog today. What is still up, I think, is the one from yesterday about the shoe lady. If you haven't read that, go back and read it, and then we'll talk about what she's going to do when she goes on this mission for her dear leader. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Men who were fighting for all of our lives are now fighting for children, for homes and for wives. Fighting for the memory of all who fell before. But the soldiers of peace just can't kill anymore.
Sometimes I'm happy. But wars are not a time of joy. These aren't joyous times.
It's about 25 before the hour. So Bush today said he is going to dispatch Secretary of State Rice to Republic of Georgia to help work out a peace deal between Georgia and Russia. Oh, yeah. I can just see Putin and Saakashvili right now going, oh, please, cut. Well, Saakashvili, yeah, he wants this because he feels like somebody slowly pushed his shoulder blades apart a little bit and inserted an 8-inch long butcher knife. But we'll get to that a little bit later on tonight, too. That would have been Karl Rove, but we'll get to that. Bush was out in the Rose Garden today and making his statement that was just drenched and dripping with hypocrisy. Had it been blood, it would have looked like a scene from The Shining, where the blood comes gushing out from behind the elevator doors and rolls down the hallway. That's what it would have looked like on the steps of the porch leading into the Rose Garden today had the hypocrisy been blood instead of hypocrisy. But Bush told Russia that it has to keep its word regarding a ceasefire. Now, that's based on the corporate news media's reports and various spy agencies who are enthralled to the corporate media that the Russians are not keeping the peace, that they are gobbling up little bits here and there, which, again, is not to defend Russia. I'm real aware of what Russia has done in Chechnya and the slaughter that was perpetrated against those poor. But, you know, what can you say about former members of the Soviet Union other than lie down with dogs, get up with cancer? You know what? What can you say? But that's a different story. Bush said that the United States insists that what he calls the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Georgia must be respected. See what I mean? Think of the scene when Wendy and Jack's little boy, was it Jack or Johnny? What was the character, Kathy, in The Shining?
Danny isn't here, Mrs. Torrance.
Not the little kid that lived in his throat, but it was Wendy Torrance and...
Here's Johnny!
Was it Johnny? Oh, never mind. But think of that scene when Danny is in the hallway on his big wheel, and he comes around the corner, and he stops, and he looks at the door to the elevator, and all of a sudden, more blood than you could ever imagine just comes rolling up, gushing down the hallway. When George Bush talks about a different nation respecting the sovereignty and territorial integrity of yet another nation, a third nation, it's unbelievable. I mean, how does he do it? Only someone who is completely amoral and devoid of any sense of integrity, truth, justice, balance, karma, common sense, a grasp of the English language, what sentences mean, what words mean, paragraphs. Only anyone who is able to do that, i.e. George Bush, can make a statement that admonishes a country to respect the sovereignty and territorial integrity of another nation. It's unbelievable. Bush also said that Russia's actions, his words, raise serious questions about its intentions in that region. Serious questions? Nobody's told you yet what this is about? Come on, George. We realize you're dumber than a pound of hamburger, but no one has told you what this is about? This is in part a reaction to what Cheney has been forcing the United States into vis-a-vis Russia for the past 7 years. You know, the non-aggressive, non-offensive radar installations only being put along the southern borders of Russia to protect the United States against a possible missile attack from Iran. Of course, that's just part of it, but the intentions of Mr. Putin, George, are very clear. He's sick of being bitch-slapped by you and the neocons, and he's going to start slapping back, and so is his government. So this is not Iraq you're screwing with. This is not Panama. This is not Grenada. Huh? This is not the North Koreans. This is not Afghanistan. This is Mother Russia. How far you want to take it, George? Bush also said that the U.S. military will lead a humanitarian mission to provide supplies to civilians who have been affected by this fighting. The U.S. military. Bush sticking out his lower lip and clenching his little wee fist said, "This mission will be vigorous and ongoing. A U.S. C-17 aircraft with humanitarian supplies is on its way, and in the days ahead, we will use U.S. aircraft as well as naval forces to deliver humanitarian and medical supplies, like we did in Burma." Uh-huh. So, what's he looking for? Naval forces. The only way naval forces can arrive in Georgia is by using the Black Sea. The Russian Black Sea fleet is already there, patrolling off the coast of Georgia and the other province and breakaway republic in question, Akhazia. I don't have it in front of me, so don't email me. I know I'm mispronouncing it. I got it all wrong, but you know what I'm talking about. So Bush is going to send U.S. aircraft into a war zone in disguise, being patrolled by Russian aircraft firing Russian missiles. And he's also going to send, how is he going to get a naval force? This is what he said. Naval forces will be delivering, cough, cough, humanitarian and medical supplies to our dear friends, the Georgians. Are we going to approach the coast of Georgia and order the Soviet or the Russian Navy to get out of the way? Hey, get out of the way. We're coming through with bandages and stuff. Is that what we're going to do? Now, is there another way? I don't know. Is there another way to deliver, to use the United States Navy to approach Georgia? I guess if you go to the Caspian Sea, there might be a river or two. If you want to flow upstream or send your ships, I don't know. When I look at a map, all I see as the western border of Georgia, all I see is the Black Sea. And I know that the Russian Navy maintains a huge force on the Black Sea. Well, we'll see what happens, right? He went on to say, quote, "We expect Russia to honor its commitment to let in all forms of humanitarian assistance." Well, George, they didn't say anything about allowing U.S. military forces in. They said humanitarian assistance. They didn't say the United States Navy, the Marines, the Air Force. Huh? He went on, "We expect Russia to ensure that all lines of communication and transport, including seaports, airports, roads, and airspace, remain open for the delivery of humanitarian assistance and for civilian transit." Kind of like we did with Iraq, when hundreds of thousands of people, after your psychotic father invaded, hundreds of thousands of people starved to death, were being burned alive, were dying, having their DNA twisted into all sorts of new strands and spirals because of the use of depleted uranium. And where sick and dying children in that country couldn't even get a goddamn transfusion? Is that what you're talking about, Mr. Bush? Remain open for the delivery of humanitarian assistance when other nations were begging to get into Iraq. And you and Bill Clinton and your psychotic father said no, let them die. What did Madeleine Albright say? It was the death of 500,000 children worth it, Madam Secretary? Yes, I think it was. Oh, and then years later, oh, I shouldn't have said that. I really take that back. That was a terribly insensitive thing for me to say. No, Mrs. Albright, it was a terribly criminal thing for you to say. You belong in the dock with the rest of these war criminals. But I am a Democrat. Oh. He went on to say, "We expect Russia to meet its commitment to cease all military activities in Georgia, and we expect all Russian forces that enter Georgia in recent days to withdraw from that country." You can just hear Putin, can't you? I can. Listen, just tilt your head and cup your ear. You can hear Putin. If you understand Russian, you know what Putin is saying that George Bush can do with his naval and air forces and his Condoleezza Rice. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy.
I've stepped in the middle of seven side forest. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain you're gonna fall.
Up to the flying monkey ride, it's more of Mike Molloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. So Bush is laying out his expectations where it concerns the Russian response to his sending the shoe lady. This will be rich. For what reason is Condoleezza Rice being sent there? Other than the fact that this makes it appear that we still have a Department of State, that we still have the equivalent of a foreign minister. Which, of course, we do not, at least not operating out of so-called, is that Foggy Bottom? What we have is an executive officer. His name is Dick Cheney, who controls everything. Condoleezza Rice is window dressing. She is the person that allows Bush to say, when he is challenged about his ability to hire people not based on anything racial to point to Condoleezza Rice as he pointed to Colin Powell and say, I just always point to them. Condoleezza Rice has as much authority in this government as I do, or as you do. Bush also noted in his little chat-up today before he dispatched Ms. Rice, he noted that Russia has damaged its relations with the United States, Europe, and other countries with this response to the adventurism, to use a term from the Cold War, in response to the adventurism of Saakashvili. The Russia has damaged its relations with the U.S., Europe, and other countries, and Bush said, quote, it should begin restoring its place in the world, or in order to begin restoring its place in the world, Russia's place in the world, Russia must, quote, must keep its word and act to end this crisis, end quote. Well, the New York Times reports today that the U.S. took a series of steps that emboldened Georgia. We sent advisors to build up the Georgian military, including an exercise last month with more than 1,000 American troops, a goodly percentage of which were from right here in the Atlanta area. The U.S. has been pressing hard to bring Georgia into the NATO orbit. That was in the Times today, if you want to read the whole article that's there. In response to that, from the Institute for Public Accuracy, Francis Boyle, who is a professor of international law at the University of Illinois, and the author of Breaking All the Rules and Destroying World Order, Francis Boyle said today, quote, it is curious but not surprising how the Bush administration and its allies have now found renewed respect for international law in the Caucasus. But not when it comes to, one, the United States invading Afghanistan and Iraq while threatening to attack Iran, two, Israel invading Lebanon and Palestine, attacking Syria and threatening to attack Iran, three, Ethiopia invading Somalia, four, Colombia attacking Ecuador, and so on. From an international law perspective, Francis Boyle says, the real issue here is whether during her trip to Tbilisi a month ago, U.S. Secretary of State Rice gave the proverbial green light to Georgia to attack South Ossetia and thus deliberately provoke an overreaction by Russia. And how does this fit in with the U.S.-UK naval armada currently steaming for the Persian Gulf and possible military confrontation with Iran over its right to engage in nuclear enrichment under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty? We'll leave the answer up to you. Richard Falk, Professor Emeritus of International Law at Princeton, said today, quote, I am above all astounded by the mainstream media's failure to take proper note of the pipeline geopolitics that infuses the Russian moves with their global significance. Also, in the course of condemning Russia, Bush failed to take any account of the fact of Georgia's provocations in denying rights to the people of South Ossetia, which continue to threaten the population with Georgian oppressive rule. On a wider front, Washington's effort to penetrate the Russian sphere of influence in Central Asia by seeking to promote NATO membership for Georgia and Ukraine, together with the intended deployment of a missile defense system in Eastern Europe, undoubtedly helped tip the scales in Moscow. One can imagine the U.S. outrage if Russia reacted similarly to American interventions in Cuba or Panama. Even so, Professor Falk writes, the Russian recourse to force across an international boundary is a challenge to the core principles of international law and to the UN Charter. This is not a defensive use of force on the part of the Russians, and from an international law perspective should be challenged and censured. At the same time, it pales in significance if compared to analogous U.S. behavior, especially the 2003 unprovoked and unlawful aggression against Iraq. At this point, what is needed in Georgia is for the Russians to withdraw and for the UN to establish a peacekeeping presence in South Ossetia and Abkhazia, capable of protecting the human rights and autonomy of these two entities until some sort of internationally monitored referendum can serve as the basis for self-determination. To revive Cold War rhetoric, as Bush did with the use of the free world in relation to Georgia, is one more instance of monumental irresponsibility by the president and Orwellian in its implication that Georgia was a democracy respectful of human rights. End quote. But what do these pointy-headed intellectuals know, right? We'll be back after the break, and coming up in this hour, A Moment with Bob. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. This next item kind of reminded me of, was it last year, Kathy, when the drought here in Georgia was more severe than it is now, although we're still in a state of drought emergency here. But and the governor of Georgia, a religious fanatic named Sonny Perdue, gathered together some of the fundamentalist ministers from around Metro Atlanta, I think it was. I don't know where he got them, but and they had a big public prayer. Although that's against what Jesus taught, they had a big public prayer, begging their Lord and Savior for rain, since nothing else seemed to work. And sure enough, a couple days later, we had tiny little sprinkles, you know, which made a lot of people here in Georgia raise their fist to heaven and accuse God of being one great big old tease. But this next story kind of reminded me of that. The Prime Minister of Georgia, one Vladimir Gorgenitsa, he made a special call to Israel yesterday morning to receive a blessing from one of the Haredi community's most important rabbis and spiritual leaders, Rabbi Aharon Lieb Steinman. Now, Haredi, the Haredi community is one of the most conservative in all Judaism. They trace their heritage, or their lineage, I should say, back to Moses. Now, the Rabbi Steinman, is in his 90s. He is known as the father of the yeshiva world. He said to Vladimir, okay. And he blessed the Jewish community of the Republic of Georgia, quote, and all who live in that place, end quote. Now, according to Rabbi Steinman's followers, shortly after the rabbi uttered the blessing, Russia announced a ceasefire with war-torn Georgia. See how that works? Of course I'm laughing. What the hell do you expect me to do? I don't mean to constantly be heaping disrespect on the world's religions, but what the hell am I supposed to do? It's just more madness, more insanity. But I digress. During Tuesday morning prayers, Rabbi Shimon Brook, the chairman of the Israel branch of the Council for Saving Lost Jews, which is a Haredi organization that builds educational institutions in Eastern Europe, Rabbi Brook received a phone call from the Republic of Georgia. Rabbi Brook said, quote, I was in the middle of my prayer, so all I could do was grunt into the phone, end quote. Shortly after I finished praying the Amida, my phone rang again. The voice said, this is Prime Minister of Georgia, Vladimir Gurganidze, speaking. You brought me a letter from a man named Stuman. Actually, it was Steinman. Is he still alive? I've heard that he is a holy man. I want him to pray for us and our state, end quote. All right, well, Rabbi Brooks said he had met with Steinman around noon on Tuesday and presented Gurganidze's request to the rabbi. Rabbi Brooks said, quote, there were a lot of raised eyebrows when shortly after Rabbi Steinman made the blessing, we heard about the ceasefire, end quote. Raised eyebrows, why? Isn't that what the man prayed for? Rabbi Brook had met with the Georgian Prime Minister a few months back to thank him for his support, the Georgian Prime Minister's support for Jewish educational institutions built in Georgia by the Haredi community. During the meeting, Rabbi Brook presented Gurganidze with a letter from Rabbi Steinman in which the rabbi referred to the Georgian government as, quote, a regime of loving kindness, end quote. Rabbi Steinman. I beg to differ, Your Holiness. The government of Georgia did not display loving kindness in its open assault on the citizens of Ossetia, South Ossetia, Your Holiness, to be specific, in which thousands of people have been burned, butchered, and murdered. That, Your Holiness, is not loving kindness. Now, I realize that it is not too different from what Joshua was told to do after wandering around with his dad in the desert for all those years, to cross into the land of Canaan and butcher everybody. Because, well, obviously, we're dealing with a loving God. But I digress! In Tbilisi, the capital of Georgia, the Haredi Council runs a nursery school, two grade schools, a yeshiva for boys, and a high school for girls. Many of Tbilisi's Jewish educators and rabbis, including the chief rabbi of Georgia, are products of the local educational institutions. Well, that's wonderful. That is definitely wonderful. This is one of the reasons one of the countless reasons why religion turns my stomach. I don't care what the religion is, with maybe one or two exceptions, and they're not really religions, but it just turns my stomach. Georgia, His Holiness says, the Georgian government is a regime of loving kindness. Rebbe, if I may, you need to be updated on the loving kindness of the leadership of Georgia, with all due respect. According to one of the bloggers, Empty Wheel, the White House's online blogger, the White House has started to panic over a meeting back on July 9th between Condoleezza Rice and Mikhail Saakashvili. They already met. Huh? And the White House now is desperate to suggest that the shoe lady didn't encourage Georgia's crackdown in South Ossetia. And Empty Wheel writes, given that panic, I wonder whether Karl Rove had any similar chats with Saakashvili when they were in Yalta together just days later. And there's a lot of justified chatter on the web about the role of Randy Schoeneman, who recently ended his consulting for the Republic of Georgia and is now a campaign advisor to John McCain. Here's a news item. Senator John McCain's top foreign policy advisor prepped his boss for an April 17 phone call with the president of Georgia and then helped the presumptive Republican presidential nominee prepare a strong statement of support for the fledgling republic. The day of the call, a lobbying firm partly owned by this advisor, Randy Schoeneman, signed a $200,000 contract to continue providing strategic advice to the Georgian government in Washington. My, these are small circles, aren't they? Well, usually when sharks attack, they do keep the circles concentric and small and just absolutely shred whatever is in the middle until the water turns pink. And as Empty Wheel writes, given the way McCain has boasted of his frequent calls to Saakashvili in attempts to reclaim the mantle of the best international leader, it raises questions of whether the Bush crime family, my words, see no evil approach to Georgia was part of a deliberate campaign strategy. No, you don't think so. You don't think Karl Rove, when he was over there, sat down with Saakashvili, whatever the hell his name is, and said, all right, look, you know, McCain will give you a much better deal than Obama, so go ahead, attack. See, this is called the old double-double cross. Poor Saakashvili thought, okay, they're encouraging me to attack. I'll attack. I'll attack the Ossetians. I'm not going to attack Russia. Oh, my God, they come in here and stomp the hell out of me. But I'll attack those stupid-ass Ossetians. They're not real people anyway. Ossetia, what's that? And Karl Rove said, yeah, go ahead. We got your back. And besides, the Russians won't do anything, and this will make McCain look good, because McCain can say, well, yes, my advisor has been working. But what Rove really did was pull the double-double cross on poor old Saakashvili. Because now he's left standing there. McCain gets to claim his bona fides, and the United States is going to do that. Oh, that's right, we're sending Condoleezza Rice in the U.S. Navy. Never mind.
Because life's too short to listen to right-wing radio, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Anyone past the hour. Now, Empty Wheel, writing at Fire Dog Lake Blogspot, goes on. I want you to hear this. He raises the issue, he or she, I'm not sure who Empty Wheel is, but raises the issue about whether the approach to Georgia, the Bush crime family's approach to Georgia, was part of a deliberate campaign strategy to help McCain. And Empty Wheel goes on, particularly when you consider the fact that Karl Rove may have met with Saakashvili just days after the July 9 private dinner between Condoleezza and Saakashvili that the White House, State Department, and Department of Defense are now panicked about. Rove was in the neighborhood in Yalta at a conference with Saakashvili 3 days after the meeting. Now, here's the little schedule. On one of those days, from 9:30 in the morning to 11 in the morning, a plenary session, elections in Russia and the USA, impact on Ukraine and Europe. That's the title. Subject, what will be the foreign policy of the new Russian and American leadership over the coming years? How will it impact their relationship with the European Union and Ukraine and the European Union's further enlargement? The moderator is Richard Haass. The panel, Sergei Glazyev, director, Institute for New Economy, member of the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th Russian State Duma, Konstantin Grishenko, ambassador to the Russian Federation, first deputy secretary of the National Security and Defense Council of Ukraine, Alexander Rahr, program director, German Council on Foreign Relations, member of the board of YES, Karl Rove, former deputy chief of staff to George W. Bush, chief strategist for Bush presidential campaigns, and Bob Schrum, a political consultant. And senior fellow, Wagner Graduate School of Public Service, New York University, blah, blah, blah. Empty Wheels says, I mean, given that Rove was talking about the upcoming election, as Saakashvili was walking into the room, it sure does make you wonder whether Rove said anything to Saakashvili about how, You know, a firmer hand in South Ossetia might help Georgia ensure its strong relationship with the U.S. going forward.
Huh? Right? Hey, Mr. Prime Minister, come here. Let me talk to you a minute. Hey, have I got a deal for you? Come here. Listen to me. We want you to get a little froggy with the Ossetians and jump. Jump on them. Jump on them. Why should you do that? We just want to slap Putin around a little bit, and this is the best way to do it. He's not going to do anything. He's not going to do anything. You'll have the full support of NATO, the European Union, and the United States. Go ahead. Go ahead. You're our boy over here. Don't you understand that? Come here. Let me kiss the top of your head. Come here. Okay. Now listen. Listen to Uncle Carl. Attack the Ossetians. Just slaughter the hell out of them. Do a blitzkrieg thing. You don't know what that word means? Look it up. Do a blitzkrieg thing. A lot of deaths, a lot of destruction, a lot of blood and gore and people burned alive in their basements. We call it shock and awe. You can call it whatever you want, but do it. And this will slap the Russians, and this will speed up your admission into NATO and the European Union, because you will have, kind of put Putin in his place.
Should I really do that?
Yes, yes. Listen to Uncle Carl. So this poor schmuck does it. What was Uncle Carl's real plan? To bolster the chances for George, or for, might as well be George, for John McCain back in the States. The senile, brain-dead sucker with the chunky face who's walking around, I'm going to be president, my friends, because I know Misha. Yeah, he referred to the president of Russia as Misha. You like that? Misha and I talk all the time, my friends, and so poor Misha does what Karl Rove whispers in his ear after Dick Cheney whispers in Karl Rove's ear. Misha goes ahead and attacks, and what happens? Bang! Down comes the bear. Oops. Oops. What the hell do these neocons in the United States think Russia is? What do they think it is? Now, a great Russian expert, Soviet expert, is Miss Rice, right? Wasn't that one of her claims to fame? She was a Soviet expert during the time of the meltdown of the Soviet Union, the dissolution of that collection of Soviet states. What does Condoleezza Rice know other than the address of the nearest Monoblonic store? Did I mispronounce that one, too?
That was close enough.
I get my shoes at Payless. I don't know from Monoblonic. I just know it was on Sex and the City. So what does Condoleezza Rice know? Absolutely nothing. What is her mission? Her mission is to go ahead over there now and talk with Misha. Misha. Ah, what a mess. What are we going to do here? Send me troops. Misha, calm down. Is it a diversion to keep us focused away from what is going on in Iran as a mighty military force steams toward the Persian Gulf? And one of the guys in charge of notifying everybody about nuclear assaults has been cashiered, well, moved aside in the U.S. Navy. Or is it just, I don't know, what is it? Does anybody know? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
It is 26 before the hour. Anna in Los Angeles sent this to me regarding Empty Wheel, the writer at Fire Dog Lake. It is a woman. Her name is Marcy Wheeler of Ann Arbor. M.T. Wheeler. Get it? M.T. Wheel. Anna writes, she's Fire Dog Lake's lawyer type and has been doing amazing investigative and analytical work for them for some time now. Sure would be nice if we had traditional reporters doing that type of thing. So, thanks, Anna. M.T. Wheel is female. Yeah, I know. I'm still a victim of my generation. As soon as I see a non-gender name, I attach the male pronoun to it. You know, what am I going to do, right? Oh, my goodness. And now, once again, it's time for A Moment with Bob. Hey, Mike. When I was a kid, I read the horror comics that were supposed to rot my brain. This could explain everything. William Gaines, publisher of the infamous EC Comics and Mad Magazine, presented to young, impressionable minds tales from the crypt, the vault of horror, the haunt of fear. Each terror tale was introduced by the vault keeper, the old witch, or my favorite, the crypt keeper. As Stephen King recounts in his book, Dance Macabre, quote, one typical EC screamer goes like this. The hero's wife and her boyfriend determined to do away with the hero so they can run away together and get married. These two heels, who might have stepped whole and breathing from a James M. Cain novel, take the poor slob of a husband for a ride, and the boyfriend puts a bullet between his eyes. They wire a cement block to the corpse's leg and toss him over the bridge into the river. 2 or 3 weeks later, our hero, a living corpse, emerges from the river, rotted and eaten by the fish. He shambles after wifey and her friend, not to invite them back to his place for a few drinks either, one feels. One piece of dialogue from the story, which I've never forgotten, is, I'm coming, Marie, but I have to come slowly because little pieces of me keep falling off. End quote. Stephen King. Scary stuff, Bob writes, for little kids growing up in the 50s, almost as bad as Duck and Cover. But for sheer terror, the stories the Crypt Keeper told were harmless fairy tales when compared to what the insane Dominican nuns told the young, impressionable minds under their care. This is what Sister Mary Sinister told a room full of 7-year-old kids 50 years ago. Imagine a steel ball the size of the earth. Every 1,000 years, a sparrow flies down and sharpens its beak upon the huge steel ball, wick, 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 and then flies away. The time it takes for the sparrow to wear away that immense steel ball to nothing, well, that would be one day in hell. Pretty scary, huh? But the story the insane Dominican nun told that caused me the most dread, that gave me the most fear-filled sleepless nights and panic-induced stomach aches, was this.
There are two trains. Train A, traveling 70 miles per hour, leaves Westford, heading toward Eastford, 260 miles away. At the same time, train B, traveling 60 miles an hour, leaves Eastford, traveling toward Westford. When do the two trains meet, and how far from each city do they meet?
As far as I'm concerned, the most blood-curdling stories ever told begin with the words,
there are two trains.
But I submit for your consideration, as Rod Serling might say, Americans of voting age have been presented with a variation of this terror tale every 4 years for the last 28 years. The election year story goes something like this. There are two candidates for president. John McCain, the candidate from the right, will not withdraw troops from Iraq, but proposes an impossible victory in the immoral war the United States began. He does not rule out a war with Iran. He is against universal health care, supports GATT and NAFTA, and his energy policy is dictated by oil and gas-connected contributions to his presidential campaign. He will not restore the Constitution and erroneously believes that the Constitution established the United States of America as a Christian nation. Barack Obama, the candidate perceived to be a liberal, proposes keeping troops in Iraq, until 2010. Under his so-called peace plan, using previous year's death rates, we can project that tens of thousands more Iraqis as well as another 1,000 or so Americans will die. Obama would consider missile strikes on Iran. He does not want to unilaterally reopen negotiations on NAFTA. He does not support a universal single-payer not-for-profit healthcare system. And with his FISA compromise vote, he destroyed the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. So the problem to be answered, and as the good Dominican nuns admonished, you must show your work. Which candidate should Americans vote for who would reverse U.S. policy in the Middle East, adopt single-payer national health insurance, cut the huge, bloated, wasteful military budget, say no to nuclear power and adopt a carbon pollution tax, aggressive crackdown on corporate crime and corporate welfare, end corporate personhood, defend, restore, and strengthen the civil justice system, and prosecute the Bush-Cheney regime? Be sure to include in your calculations that, historically, liberals have always derided the Republican base for consistently voting against their best interests. Time's up! Put your pencils down and pass your ballot to the front of the class. Oh, I forgot. We don't have a paper trail, so we can't verify your vote. It won't make any difference anyway, because as the Crypt Keeper would say, it was a trick question. The correct answer is none of the above. We should have voted for Kucinich in the primary or Nader in November. But we've been indoctrinated very well. We believe that if we vote for the candidate who represents our interests, that's called throwing your vote away. And the Crypt Keeper says, regards, Bob. And thus ends another Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. You can find tonight's Tales of Terror, A Moment with Bob, at the Mike Malloy website following the termination of this evening's program. Do we have time for this before the break? I think so. This is from Beth. She got an email from a friend of hers in Australia. And here's what the friend in Australia wrote. Regarding Obama, I'm worried. I thought Hillary would be a great concern, but now I feel Obama is of greater concern. Unfortunately, I feel the United States, no matter who really gets to be president, is in dire trouble. And the United States has and is losing its power. Many countries now see the states as a power that was. You are being hit from within by the type of governments you have and the apathy of the people. When I have traveled through the states and visited many of your states, I saw so much poverty. When you see other first world countries, you do not see such poverty except in second or third world countries. The whole world is shifting due to the countries like China, India, and Russia. One other very vital problem the states have is your media. You do not have decent reporters who let you know about what is happening outside the states. When I first visited the United States, I was so desperate to find anything about what was happening in Europe, Asia, or anywhere. I couldn't believe how sheltered you are by your media. It was shocking. I don't like having to say these things about your country, but unfortunately it is what is being seen by other countries. And you would be surprised by how many people over the years I have met who have visited your country who say the same thing. They can see the terrible problems that lay ahead for you. I love the friendly people of the states and your beautiful countryside, but I just shake my head when I watch your news channels and how you, the people of the United States, are being sheltered as to what is really going on outside in the real world. Also in Vietnam, when I was there a few months ago, the wealth there is amazing. It is going the same way of China. Just amazing. Gosh, I have ranted on. Sorry. I will reply to your earlier email later. I've now got to run over to the house and sort some problems out with the electrics. It never stops. Big hugs, Kathy. Sydney. Thanks for sharing that, Beth. I have a friend who is Argentinian, And I haven't heard from him, oh my goodness, probably 3 years, maybe four. But he said essentially the same thing. He loved the country. But, you know, where are you going, Mike? Where is your country going? Where are you going? And I asked him, you know, in the moment, I said, are you just quoting Leonard Cohen? I love the country, but I can't stand the scene. And Rick kind of laughed, and he just said, no. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Sit down, shut up, and take it. Or get out the vote, and you'll fight, Stephen. We might have a chance to make it if W goes home. When W goes home, so glad. The worst president we ever had. He's a damn shame, a big liar. He plays like he's Jesus while the world's on fire.
Because life's too short to listen to right-wing radio, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Oh, that is nice. 10 before the hour.
So at night I sit and I watch the stars to stay.
All right, let's let's do some phone calls here. You want to do that? All right. Phone number is 800-989-1480. And again, tomorrow night, we're doing the program tomorrow night. Friday night will probably be a rebroadcast of one of the shows here on the Malloy program. I'll be on the road to Seattle for the massive blowout and party that's going to occur there at the Seattle Civic Center Saturday night. Randy Rhodes, Stephanie Miller, Rachel Maddow, Sam Cedar, Tom Hartman, Ron Reagan, and me. All of us together for a We the People town hall meeting sponsored by KPTK in Seattle, our affiliate there. And it is going to be a hoot. I hope you have a ticket. I understand that there were 1,500 tickets that sold out very, very quickly. I hope you got one. Okay? It's going to be a hoot. We'll be back Monday. To your phone calls, Gordon is calling from Oklahoma City, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Gordon.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. You know, this whole situation with Georgia and all the rhetoric with Russia is really...
Wait a minute. Is this Gordon that we went on the cruise with?
That's me.
Oh, hey, Gordon! I thought you were just Gordon. You're not just Gordon. You're Gordon.
Right.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing very well.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Just kind of lost it there for a minute. We all don't stay in touch all that much, and it was such a hoot going on that. Anyway, I'm glad you called in. Now, where were you before so rudely interrupted you? All right.
Oh, that's okay. You know, this whole situation that's going on in Georgia is really bothering. But I think what's as much disturbing about that is the whole naval armada that's heading toward the Persian Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this whole thing's a distraction. Maybe the Bush administration is trying to soften us up a little bit for the big event that's going to happen against Iran. I suspect, according to some of the things I've been reading, is that Russia and maybe to some degree China, but mostly Russia, may be escorting the shipments in and out of Iran.
Escorting what shipments?
Like oil and that sort of thing, because we're going to do an embargo. That's coming. that train is coming down the track.
Well, I know Russian engineers have been working with the Iranians, and Russian manufacturing plants have been providing the hardware. Russian engineers providing the software to build these nuclear power generators or whatever they turn out to be. But you're saying that you think the Russians are assisting in the transporting of Iranian oil?
I think they will. If we
We
do an embargo,
I see.
Then they'll be assisting, and then it's going to be just like the Cuban Missile Crisis all over again.
Well, you know, you're painting a scenario here, Gordon, that just scares the bejesus out of me, because I put nothing, absolutely nothing, past Dick Cheney. And you notice how quiet. We very seldom hear anything about Cheney anymore. The last thing I heard, he was not going to, and then, yes, he was going to speak at the Republican convention in September. Cheney's acidity claws and fingerprints are all over any kind of murderous activity that's occurred in the past 8 years anywhere on earth. I mean, this guy's reach, like any vampire, his reach is just phenomenal. So when I think that what you are saying, that the whole Georgian Russian thing is a diversion while the media is focused there, the troop movement into the Persian Gulf continues apace. It's scary. It really is. It really
is. Well, see, I think one of the things that we're what's going on now with all the noise that's coming out of Washington to really smear the Russians is to soften us up, so all of a sudden all that hatred starts coming out again. So if we have a confrontation in the Persian Gulf against the Russians, then we're all primed for it. Now, here's something else to think about. Now, you know, Cheney's been rushing around, you know, back and forth through the Middle East, and so has Condoleezza and all of that. And, you know, the price of oil has been so high that if there was an embargo and it spiked up anymore, I don't think the American public could have taken it. Mm-hmm. Price has gone down a little bit, but did you realize that the Saudis have increased their production in July, 200,000 barrels a day?
No, I did not. I may have commented on that, but it just got blew right past me, Gordon.
Right. So I'm thinking that there was some manipulation going to bring the price of oil down so that when the real hit comes, we're not going to have, you know, quite the descent. You know, if we were at $140 a barrel and, you know, the gas was $4 or $5 a gallon, then the public wouldn't have gone for it. Now that it's easing up a little bit, we're all being softened.
Oh, Gordon, listen, please be wrong.
Oh, I hope I am.
please be wrong.
I don't put anything past them.
I don't either. All right, pal.
Hey,
stay
okay, hi to Kathy.
All right, for sure, and stay in touch, Gordon.
Okay, bye.
All right, take care.
Gordon gave me a beautiful necklace on the cruise.
Does that mean you're engaged?
I'm not saying.
We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. Final hour coming up. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. My goodness, we have 3 open lines here. Anybody want to play? The number's 800-989-1480. I would even invite Republicans or conservatives or neoconservatives to join in, but I don't know if any of you have someone near at hand who can dial the damn phone for you. But if you want to give it a shot, go ahead. Oh, God. No, never mind. Back to your calls. Jack is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Jack. Hey, Jack. Okay, let's put Jack on hold. Maybe he'll pick up. Rick is calling from Philadelphia, listening on Sirius. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. First time caller. I just discovered your program about a month ago, and I'm hooked.
Oh, really? Just a month ago. Well, welcome aboard. I haven't said that in a long time, but welcome aboard.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Hey, the late, great George Carlin referred to Mr. Bush as Governor Bush because that was the last official office that he was elected to.
Yeah,
I that line. But I like I like your chuckle nuts better. Hey, I wanted to ask you, did you see any reports? I heard a couple things today about Bush going back to drinking. Have you heard any?
Well, I've seen the pictures I think you're referring to where there are about 9 people trying to assist him through the bleachers or the VIP seats, I should say, at the Olympics.
Yep.
I saw those pictures and a picture of this goofy-ass grin on his face while he's holding up an American flag backwards. And then the picture where he's playing grab ass with one of the scantily clad women on the U.S. soccer team, or volleyball, I'm sorry, reaching down to stroke her gluteal maximi or whatever the hell it's called. You know, the guy is out of control. Can you imagine a world leader in any other country doing this sort of thing? Unless it were somebody from, oh, I don't know where, North Korea? I think that little runt probably has about as much class and cool as Bush does. But, yeah, I think he's drinking again. I don't know they'd ever stop. Now, when you add to that the supermarket tabloid stories that he is completely off the wagon and soused most of the time now, that's why Laura Bush is leaving him right after the presidency, and you say to yourself, nah, that's just supermarket tabloid trash. Then I have 2 words for you, John Edwards. So, you know, I think he's a drunk. I don't think he's ever really been sober. I think he's a liar. I wouldn't be surprised if he still snorts up a line once in a while.
Yep. All right. Well, I appreciate you taking the call, Mike, man. I'll keep listening.
All right. Please do, Rick. Let your friends know. I appreciate you tuning in. Take care, pal. Sanchez is calling from Montbello, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Sanchez.
The best possible good evening to you from the West Coast, sir.
Thanks.
Well, can I just mention something about the previous topic, the caller you were discussing about 15 seconds ago?
Yeah.
Did you hear the news about a photograph of Bush being helped out by the Secret Service agents that's in the website Wonkette.com?
Is that the one where there's 7 or 8 of them
yes.
that have him? Are they helping him out or helping him in?
Well, they're helping him up as if he's needing to get up. Laura Bush has already gotten off and she's, you know, walking down the stadium steps and she has the weirdest expression on her face like, oh my God. I think perhaps maybe the heat got to him or something and maybe he got woozy. Perhaps he was drunk. But the way the Secret Service men are handling him, especially there's a black Secret Service agent. He's got his head shaved, and he has this half smile on his face, like, "Oh my God, I have to help this man out," kind of a thing.
Really?
And he's, you would have to look at the photograph to see it. So I don't know. There's something. The way he's
I'll go back and take another look because I saw that photograph and I was more or less focused on Bush and the fact that he was surrounded by 8 people. The other photograph where he's holding the flag ass backwards. And sitting in the bottom of the frame is the corpse of Henry Kissinger. They must have exhumed it. I don't know where he's buried, somewhere in Germany. They dug up his corpse. And his wife Nancy, who took them to Beijing.
Wow.
You know, why would you carry a corpse with you? I don't get these people, Sanchez. I don't understand them.
In case you get the munchies.
God.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Oh, that
I could not resist.
Okay.
Well, look. I've been monitoring all over the place. Debka File, Middle East Times, Press TV, The Guardian, Reuters. I'm currently looking at Press TV right now, which is an English-language Iranian news site, okay? Just
right.
For full disclosure. I don't know if you've ever gone there.
Yes, I have.
And there's an interesting article.
They have, by the way, they have a lot of readers, and you're part of the you're part of California, since an awful lot of Iranians live in Southern California.
Yes, yes, they do, as a matter of fact.
But anyway.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, there's two points to the story that nobody has been discussing, is the Israeli connection to everything here. First of all, there is a huge Georgian Jewish population inside of Georgia.
Sanchez, we've been talking about this for two nights.
Okay. Right? I must have missed that part of it then, because there's been like a 20 minutes here.
A matter of fact, last week when this story first broke, we mentioned the fact that there were Israeli military advisors. They're private contractors.
Yes.
Kind of like the Israeli version of Blackwater. But these folks, dozens of them, if not scores, have been in Georgia. The head rabbi of one of the most conservative Jewish sects on the planet,
yes,
today or the other day, gave his blessing to the nation of Georgia, because Georgia treats its Jewish population with respect. The fact that there is a close connection between United States, Israel, and Georgia is not, you know, I don't think anybody should be surprised about it. The issue, one word, pipeline.
Yeah, well, of course. I should have prefaced by saying, when I meant to say that nobody in the American press is discussing. That's how I meant it. I know that you were mentioning this. Did you happen to see the other story, though, in Press TV this morning? It's ran, and it's still up right now, about Israel declaring that the Iran war is not okayed by the U.S. Evidently,
yes,
they're still waiting for the okay to go ahead and attack. It's a very tenuous and tense situation right now.
Well, what I have is from Aluf Ben, who's the writer for Haaretz. The headline is, and this is from today, U.S. puts brakes on Israeli plan for attack on Iran nuclear facilities. So you have it from an Iranian news source. I have it from an Israeli news source. Same mm-hmm. story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, at least for the moment. And, I mean, I heard you talking about this about an hour ago. Somehow I feel something went wrong. Either Saakashvili jumped the gun maybe by a week, maybe he got antsy, or perhaps it was they underestimated the roar of Moscow in retaliation to what happened. Something went wrong here, because I think it was all – it seemed like a perfect plan, but I think somebody did something wrong to screw up here, and as a result, this is the situation we have. Because, it just seems like the middle of a three-part episode right now. And you got to – I know that you understand. We've talked about this on a number of occasions. Russia right now is being put into a corner, as we discussed way back in, like, the Halloween of, like, last year. Remember the Cuban Missile Crisis? And you used that phrase earlier this evening.
Mm-hmm, right.
They've been in – when Kosovo broke off, when NATO's been trying to, like – lure all these other countries around them. And again, last night you were saying it correctly, like, with Russia kicking Georgia's ass, that sends a strong message to the region at this point that not to mess around. And I think maybe at this point Chuckle Nuts is beginning to rethink his strategy here. Maybe perhaps they will send the fleet there. Maybe they're going to go in and have a nice little exercise, but I don't know. I think because of Russia's strong reaction, perhaps they're rethinking things. Maybe they're going to go ahead and take and do the whole thing after all. But I think they're stopping short and thinking about it right now.
They may, but as I think we all know, Sanchez, there is evil afoot. There is madness afoot. There is chicanery and deception afoot. We'll be back. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
neocons. Don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour.
We were young together. We were on the ball. We did not believe.
You're sitting here looking at these pictures from Wonkette.com of Bush. Oh my God, I hadn't seen all of these. Whoa, we will post the link at MikeMalloy.com when the program's over. Matter of fact, we'll try to get them up now. But holy Toledo. Back to your phone calls. Mike is calling from Montana, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Hi. Finally, you're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you.
I just want to mention something. The previous caller, Gordon, was talking about missile crisis in Cuba, the Cuba missile crisis.
Well, it wasn't Gordon, but yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, there is not drunk people in Kremlin now. I think you would agree with me now on that one.
Right. Yeah. Yeltsin is gone.
Yeltsin and Khrushchev, everybody's gone. Now there's like cold-minded people, practical, you know?
Uh-huh.
That was my concern. And another thing, today, Medvedev, I believe, said that Washington playing dangerous game. It's after Bush released his statement. That was like kind of scary.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely.
And another thing they said, Medvedev said that Russians have pulled out the troops. But reports that I heard on the Fox today on the truck stop, that there is still, I don't know how you say it, like, well, people destroyed the properties and stuff.
Destroyed what, Mike?
The property.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so, like a mess. In Georgia, there was a very strong opposition. Before last year, I believe last year, maybe a little bit more, of this Saakashvili character.
Mm-hmm.
Very strong opposition. And there was tear gas used before election. And some opposition leaders, they were detained prior election.
Right.
You know, it's like Karl Rove play. And I thought I was paranoid. And I called a few of my friends. One of them is Georgian.
Mm-hmm.
And they were agree with me. That in case if Russians even pulled out and there is some kind of mess still going on, it's by opposition. It very well might be by opposition.
Mm-hmm.
However, your media and this Saakashvili truthful character will present that as the Russian, I don't know, thugs or something, you know?
Right.
It's all very, very scary.
It is indeed, and American media presents Georgia, and so does Bush and Rice, presents Georgia as this, and so does McCain, this fledgling little democracy. It is not a democracy, as you point out. It is a country that is involved in human rights violations, and I'm not making any big claim for human rights in Russia. They have their problems too, but I wouldn't make any claim for human rights in the United States either. You see, this is where we've gotten to. But as far as Georgia being this what did McCain say, this tiny little democracy, McCain used words to diminish Georgia without even realizing what he was doing. This is a country of millions of people, and McCain refers to it as a tiny little democracy. But minorities in Georgia are treated, like minorities in the United States, I guess, only worse. And any kind of political opposition will not be tolerated.
May I say something? It's
sure.
Actually more complicated like this. You see, there's many different nations in Georgia. Like Saakashvili, for example, he's Kakhet. It's a country used to call Kalhida
right.
In ancient times.
Yeah, somebody sent me a list of seven or eight countries that comprise the small independent enclaves in that area.
No, not even independent. Even Georgia itself, like for last 100 years, they divided by Megrels, Kakhets, You know, like Stalin was Djugashvili, last name and Anashvili.
Right.
Saakashvili is also Kakhet. They're like merchant nation. But what considered to be like blue blood over there, it's the last name that ends with Tse, like Shevardnadze, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
However, Ossetia, it was actually different nation,
uh-huh.
Even though they look the same. But the question I want to make, it's all like rhetoric, you know, historical rhetoric.
Okay, very quickly, because we're almost out of time,
very
Mike.
Quick.
Okay.
Will you be surprised if we're going to go through this thing, like, and it's going to end up fine? Will you be surprised if you will see Saakashvili teaching in Harvard? Like year from now, political science with John Yu and others.
No, I wouldn't be surprised at all, because the alternative might be the Russians to capture him and put him on trial for war crimes and crimes against humanity and genocide. So I would imagine, that Saakashvili is going to wind up as a tenured professor at Harvard. Thanks, Mike. We'll be back after the break. I've got 4 open lines now. What am I pissing you people off tonight? 800-989-1480. I'm not talking about Obama and Clinton.
Inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Russ is calling from Dallas, listening on KMNY. Russ, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thank you. Listen, really appreciate what you're doing, getting the truth out there and giving people a more rational viewpoint of what's really taking place, both within our government and out, you know, in our world. I just wanted to say that no one should be surprised by what's going on, because the Bush foreign policy and the cloak and dagger way that they have conducted it, and the heavy-handed way that they choose to deal with other nations, particularly nations who don't agree with them on foreign policy matters, this was bound to happen. All that happened is they made a misstep. They calculated wrong. They found somebody who's big enough, strong enough, and more than willing and able to fight back. And that's what's happening. We've heard about why Russia attacked Georgia and all of that, but we've heard about the reasons from the Georgians as well as from this current administration. But we really don't know why, from the Russian viewpoint, why they felt it necessary to attack them. We don't know. In other words, because they've conducted things in such a cloak and dagger manner, we really don't know what was taking place behind
well,
the scenes.
I would tend to disagree with that a little bit, Russ. If you go to news sources in Europe and Russia and Turkey, and you can do that online, the reason, the precipitating event seems to have been the fact that the Russian so-called peacekeepers that were stationed in South Ossetia to protect the ethnic Russians who lived there were attacked by the Georgians and killed. And there were, from what I can understand, there were scores of Russian soldiers, actual soldiers, who and Russian civilians who were in, either living in or stationed in South Ossetia, who were killed by the invading Georgian troops. Now, that is one of the reasons that, like I say, that to me is the precipitating event that made the Russians respond. Mm-hmm. There have been a series of events, the insistence by the United States that we're going to build these radar
missile shields.
Yeah, early warning
right.
stations.
Uh-huh,
the attempts to push Georgia and Ukraine into becoming NATO members. This would be like asking Mexico and Canada during the Cold War to have become members of the Warsaw Pact. I mean, we wouldn't have
stood
for that. So Putin is being pushed around. And
he pushed back.
It's my understanding you don't push around a former KGB operative like Putin, or you're going to get pushed back. This guy's not Saddam Hussein. This is Vladimir Putin, and you don't mess with him.
Mm-hmm. And the facts, as you state, I don't disagree with at all. But I'm wondering what we may have been doing covertly that's not known now. Because that's the way the Bush administration
right.
operates,
right.
cloak and dagger, that may have led Georgia to believe or somehow, I just wouldn't be surprised if we found out later on that they had a hand somehow in this happening and simply miscalculated.
I hear you. That makes sense, Russ. And I don't think, you know, average people like you and me will ever know what these evil bastards are about. But anyway, thanks, Russ. I appreciate you checking in. Douglas is calling from Sacramento, listening on Sirius. Hey, Douglas.
Hey, Michael. Good to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
Molly and Kathy.
Doing fine. Thanks for asking.
I'm hoping that they did miscalculate, and this isn't part of some harebrained plan of theirs. I'm a little nervous at the fact that mushmouth Rice Brain is going there.
Condoleezza Rice, for the most part, I don't think does any harm. She doesn't accomplish anything. She is not a Secretary of State.
That's what I mean, Mike. The last time she showed up in public that I can remember is when she went to Lebanon and told them, you know, don't stop the ceasefire until we get permanent peace.
Well, I think she was in right. I understand what you're saying, but that's not Condoleezza Rice. She is a lap puppet for Dick Cheney, and to a lesser extent for Robert Gates. She does exactly what she's told. She is not an innovator. She is not an originator. She is not a foreign minister or a Secretary of State. She's a piece of window dressing. She goes places to give the appearance that the United States is using its full force of diplomacy all the way up to the Secretary of State to solve an issue when just the opposite is true. Condoleezza Rice will have no effect on anything. I don't think she had an effect on what happened in Lebanon.
I feel a little better. I mean, I'd kind of be glad to hear that there's something going on in the world that isn't part of their worldwide marketing scam.
Well, I'm not saying it's not part of a worldwide marketing scam, because, you know, I have about as much respect for this administration as I do for a bucket full of vomit. But I wouldn't worry about Condoleezza Rice. She's nothing but a cipher. It doesn't make any difference. She is window dressing. She looks good. She works out. She has great shoes, and I'm sorry. Back to your phone calls. Dave is in Los Angeles listening on KTLK. Dave, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, Mike.
Hey.
Just a little heads up. My son is in the Army. He's attached to a Patriot missile battery. All year they've been practicing to go to South Korea. Now they're being told Israel's their deployment. And October is probably the time they'll go.
Israel?
Yeah.
Why would American troops, if they're part of a missile battery...
Patriot missile battery, you know, they're anti-missile missiles.
Yeah, oh yeah, I know what they are, but why being sent to Israel? Israel is certainly capable of defending itself. They proved that in the first Gulf War, when all those Scud missiles fired from Iraq fell into the... Negev, fell in the desert. I don't know where they fell. Some of them...
Iraq's capability and Iran's capability are a little different.
Well, that's very true. Well, that's I don't like to hear that.
I didn't either.
Was your son instructed to kind of keep that to himself, or?
Yeah, probably. And my name's not Dave.
Oh, okay.
And we can agree to disagree on the other thing I've been emailing you about, but.
Which is what?
The Obama McCain thing, but anyway, I'm not going to go off on that again.
Well, I'm not sure.
I've been emailing you a couple times.
Okay, but I'm not sure what your emails were. This is a little bit too confusing for me, Dave. So I'm just going to move on. Thanks, pal. Appreciate it. My best to your son. Hope he's okay. Emailing me, and Dave's not your name. I don't know. Look, you know, I'm just not into weirdness and intrigue. Okay, I got enough of that from the job I do. Don't do it when you call me up. All right, thanks, Dave. Steve is calling from Buffalo, listening on the internet. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Fine, thanks. A lot of everything you do, I'm glad I got through. And well, I just had one quick point, really, just. What you were discussing before about the shoe lady going to assess you and perhaps encouraging a little adventurism there. Well, it is the Bush crime family, and just flashback 18 years ago, the apple probably doesn't fall that far from the tree. Junior doesn't like his dad very much, but they keep running the same plays. 18 years ago, it was our ambassador to Iraq who, when Saddam asked, what would we think about going
right.
into Kuwait? She said pretty much, well, we kind of look the other way about Arab-Arab conflicts. And that worked out pretty well for them in the long term.
Yeah, it did. I'm sure that Saakashvili, this miserable, misled chump, who heads the tiny little democracy of Georgia, as McCain refers to it? I'm sure that he was probably told something similar. You know, while we don't have a lot of interest in what occurs between Russia and some of its former states or its former. Parts of the Soviet Union, we will certainly back you because you're a tiny little Democrat.
all we can really do right now is throw stones.
Well, that's true. At least I think that's what McCain, the point McCain was making. Steve, thanks, man. Appreciate you checking in. Don't be a stranger. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, thanks to our production staff, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, and Ben Birch, the creative staff, Al Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, and the executive producer, Catherine Bay. Back to your phone calls at 10 before the hour. Ben is calling from L.A., listening on KTLK. Hey, Ben.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
In his book, The Invisible Government, written in 1962, the late former FBI agent Dan Smoot stated that both parties are run by the Council on Foreign Relations, and he says, quote, voters are limited to the role of choosing between parties to administer policies which the Council on Foreign Relations formulates, unquote. What do you think of the late Dan Smoot statement?
Well, I don't think it's any different from statements made by people who are not as well versed in these things as Dan Smoot. I think it's obvious to anyone that both parties have become totally corrupted. Hell, George Wallace back in 1968 said essentially the same thing when he said there's not a dime's worth of difference between the two parties. But this Council on Foreign Relations thing always intrigues me. I think those among us who get fixated on that have the cart before the horse. I don't think the Council of Foreign Relations picks candidates. I think a lot of politicians and business people belong to the Council of Foreign Relations, some of whom might adopt policies put together by the CFR, which, if you get right down to it, is nothing more than a policy think tank. I just don't see the CFR as being this booger man that a lot of people, nor do I see the Club of Rome or the Bilderbergers or, the Masons or even the Catholic Church necessarily as being these great conspiracy. Well, all right, the Catholic Church, yes, but, whatever. Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it. Skip is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Skip.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, calling from Miami. Just want to put together an interesting coincidence I heard today on the Tom Hartman show, was that along the lines of the lobbyists that work on the McCain political campaign, we've also got Karl Rove, who missed his Senate subcommittee hearing. Uh-huh. Happened to be on vacation, and guess where that was?
It was in, we talked about this last hour, but I guess you weren't here. But
no, yeah. I wasn't. Sorry, I didn't catch the whole show.
That's okay. That's okay. We did talk about it. He was at a conference that President Saakashvili was at. Rove's fingerprints and Cheney's fingerprints are all over this garbage. Yeah,
way too many coincidences falling into place in this whole thing.
Right, there are indeed, and I think the word coincidence has gotten a bad rap over its history as a word. It is a co-incident. It just means that it happened at the same time, and usually there are a lot of coincidences that are just accidental, but I think a lot of them are engineered, and I think anything that appears as a coincidence that has to do with the Bush crime family is absolutely planned, plotted down to the last possible deviation. So, yeah, I would agree with Hartman if he presented this, or if you are, that Rove was there up to the usual mischief and mayhem and destruction that he is so famous for.
Absolutely. And I think it's just going to blow up in their face, though.
One can certainly hope, Skip. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Bob is calling from Richland Park, Illinois. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Georgia is right next to Iran. There was over 1,000 Israeli technicians in Georgia. Could they not have been preparing an airbase where Israel fighters could fly out over the Caspian Sea and then attack Iran, which is only a few miles inland from the Caspian Sea?
They could indeed.
That's the only thing that I can think of. And maybe Russia is sort of spoiling that agreement.
I don't know. Hell, I don't know what to think anymore. Do you?
I think we're in big trouble. Other than that, I have no idea what to happen. But Israel technicians in Georgia are preparing an airbase for just to fly low over the Caspian Sea until they get almost to Iran. Iran is only about 50 miles from the Caspian Sea. They could get in there almost unnoticed.
And what do you suppose will happen once they get in there?
a lot of mischief.
I don't think I like your laugh.
I think we're in for some interesting time in the next couple of months.
Well, that's a Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times.
Okay, it's just a thought. I'll let your listeners debated.
All right. Hello? Yeah. All right, Bob, yes, you let the listeners debate it and what?
And I'll be listening to the outcomes.
All right. Well, you'll have to pick it up tomorrow because we are flat out of time tonight. Thanks a lot, everybody, for checking in tonight. I appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night. So take care. Wait a minute. Did I try to get us out early?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. Now we can start the music. It's been one of those nights. I'm so upset about the Georgians, I can't even look at my own clock. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, do take care. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. I do appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow night. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.